Hello, and welcome to episode 54 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grindislav, and with me as always...
Hello, I am Clem Wembers.
You're not Clem Wembers.
Have you not? Look at my Skype name. What does it say? Oh, no, you've changed it. That's unfair.
Your Skype name says Benji Catbutt, and it will always
You're misrepresenting me, which I resent, but that's fine, because I changed yours to what a goddamn narcissist cat.
Yeah, well, yours has been Benji Catbutt for quite some time, and mine has
been
what a goddamn...
Yeah, yours has been what a goddamn...
Yeah, for a
long... narcissist cat for as long as I can remember.
Yeah, so there you go.
What's up?
Not much. I said my name, the correct, proper... Spanish pronunciation, because I was looking through some old topics to find stuff to talk about, and someone mentioned, I think it was Stew Pot, mentioned that every time I said my name, he thought I was saying Princess Gorgonzolas.
It's true. That's what I think you're called.
Princess Gorgonzolas.
Yeah.
So, yes.
It's your name, isn't it?
No.
Isn't it?
No.
Princess?
No.
Your Majesty?
You hush now. Do as I say. I command you to stop playing Doom and concentrate on our podcast.
No, I'm actually I'm playing Doom on PlayStation 3 just to try it, and it's just...
Wait a minute. How are you playing Doom on PlayStation 3?
Listen to me. Doom has been ported to every single platform. My physics teacher used to play Doom on his BlackBerry phone.
Wow.
And you'd know this if you listened to the Doom podcast with Anatoly and I.
I did, but I didn't listen to
Clearly
the whole
you didn't
thing.
Pay attention in class. Were you passing notes?
Clearly,
did you bring enough for everybody?
I was passing notes about important things that didn't have to do with Doom, like, you know, social
You take that
lives.
Back right now. You take that back. But yeah, so I'm playing Doom for PlayStation 3, and it's not the same.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I've finished episode 1 of Doom in the time it took you to restart your computer and tell me about your dream.
Wow.
So,
what dream? I didn't have a dream.
I turned the difficulty down from Ultra Violence to Hurt Me Plenty, which is a mistake, because I know how to play Doom, and I know where all the enemies are, and they're not there now. I'm like, there's meant to be 4 guys there, not 2, so it sucks.
Can I just say...
If you're playing Doom, kids, make sure you play.
You're a huge Doom nerd, but I'm sure you know that, and you're probably proud of it, so...
I like Doom. What's the problem?
There's no problem.
This is a game that redefined... computer gaming.
Can I ask you a question? And I'm sure I already know the answer to this, and I bet you the answer is I don't know, because it's whatever. But how many times would you say in your life have you played Doom?
Oh my god. How many times have you sneezed? No, I haven't played. I've played it a few. You know, I won't deny.
Would you say
I like a bit of Doom.
Would you say it's more or less than 100?
Oh, are you kidding me?
Okay,
what's 100?
More or less than 1,000 times.
Oh, I don't know. No, that's...
Do you think we should look up
in the
Guinness Book of World Records? I bet you there's probably a world record for a person who's played Doom the most number of times.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen the speedrunners that play Doom, man? They finish the whole game in like 15 minutes.
No, I haven't.
I'll finish work and I'll run through like episode 1, and that's 20 minutes, and then I'm done. That's enough.
Do you enjoy it every time you do that?
What's that?
Do you enjoy running through it?
Yeah,
like that?
Absolutely. I really do.
Because it seems to me that at some point it becomes part of your daily routine. Like if you just load up Doom.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
So it's like, oh, I finished work today. Time to have some tea. Time to play through Doom for 15 minutes. That just seems so weird.
Yeah, but it's. You try, yeah. No, I like it.
I've played certain games several times. I've played Curse of Monkey Island like probably 20 times or so. But
sure,
I can't imagine just like doing it.
Well, that's well, dude. Day. Adventure games don't have the same replay value.
Oh no, I know
near
that.
The same replay value.
But even just other games, like I'm trying to think of other action games that I've replayed, and I haven't really. I think I played Assassin's Creed 1 twice and Assassin's Creed 2 twice in order to prepare for 3, but...
Yeah, but dude, Assassin's Creed games, right?
Yeah, they're really
They're
long.
Not fast.
No.
They're not fast, and they're not, like, they're not... Yeah, I've played Assassin's Creed, and I was like, okay, this is alright. It's not the same thing. Assassin's Creed is not like Doom. The closest thing, like, in modern gaming that I've played to Doom is Hotline Miami.
Okay, yeah. Well, I've only played Hotline Miami twice, and I can't imagine going through it and playing it so many times.
Oh, dude, I've played it a fair bit. I've played it much more than twice.
Oh, well, that's good. Okay, well, anyway.
Yeah, it is good. I enjoy it. It's good.
Aside from, sorry, we've been distracted. No, we haven't. We've been on point. What, aside from Doom on PlayStation 3, what else have you been playing?
Not much. Not much. I played a little bit of Alien Carnage today after work, just to, like, chill out. Just relax. I haven't played that for ages. That's a cool little game. But yeah, I've been most of my spare time has been drawing lately, you know.
Yeah,
and it's good.
So you
that's how I like to be.
You weren't just saying that for brownie points with Dave, then?
No, I don't talk shit for Dave's bros. If I talk shit to Dave, I'm like, yeah, I'll replace my head with a corn cob today. And he'll be like, what? I just like stirring people up. That's all.
Good. Well, good.
Yeah, but no, I've been doing lots of drawing. I got myself a toned paper sketch pad,
mm-hmm.
and I've been putting off using it because I'm like, I finally got a good sketch pad for the first time in my life, and I've been drawing with pencil for like 3 weeks or something like that. So I'm like, oh, dude, I'm not good enough to use a good sketch pad yet. So I've been kind of holding off using it, and then tonight I was like, it's time. Tonight's the night. So I did a picture in that.
Good.
And last night I was at my grandma's for tea, and I did a portrait of my late grandfather from a photo, and that was a lot of work. You know, it's challenging because you care about the picture, and you know there's a personal thing there. And then like, yeah, you're pushing yourself as an artist as well. Like you're trying to get better. So that was a real challenge. I was kind of worn out afterwards. You know, I went home and I was like, that was a big challenge.
Hmm.
So it's cool to do stuff to like just keep pushing yourself. Like I find like sometimes doing adventure game backgrounds can get a bit samey. You're like, I need to change something so that the next background I draw I can make better.
Yeah, sure.
I need to push myself, you know. What can I do? And that's one thing that I'm like, you know, now that I'm drawing in pencil, I'm really taking time to put more detail in stuff. Mm. So that's something I've been focusing on. It's instead of playing lots of games. I mean, I've got lots of games I want to play and stuff, but sure. I care a lot about illustration as well, so, you know, it's a two-part thing.
Well, toned sketch pads are fun because you can use white for highlights.
Yeah, I actually used a pastel white pencil. I ordered them same time I got my sketch pad because I'm like, well, this is going to be a real change-up for me, so let's do this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I did. And have you done much sketching on... I know you probably got exposed to them through art class or art school. Whatever it was you went to. Was it art school? Was it a college? I don't know. I don't know what you've done with your life. I'm sure it's exciting.
I was an art major for a while in college. I didn't go to a specific...
Okay, right.
I didn't go to an art school, per se, a school that specialized only in art, but I was an art major in...
I don't know anything about, like, colleges or universities or anything like that.
They're the same thing in America. The words are interchangeable.
Okay, because here a college is, like, senior high school is like grade 11, 12.
Well, I mean, here you have like community colleges, which are not fully accredited most of the time, and then you have universities, but everyone calls university college, so.
Okay, that's why I was getting confused.
Yeah, that's been our little clarification moment for you international listeners. And
yeah, thanks a lot. Co-host. Yeah, thank you. That clears that up. So you went to a university that did art, but it wasn't art school. Anyway,
correct.
I'm sure in your time in that facility of education,
yes,
you were exposed to this sort of stuff.
I was exposed to many things when I was an art
including
major.
Naked people that you had to draw.
Yes, correct.
I find I started figure drawing like last week, like, you know, I like on a site on the internet, Pixel Lovely, I think it is, and it's like it starts you off where you've got like 30 seconds to just quickly get a figure down. Like,
sure.
you've got to do 10 in 30 second lots each. And that's, man, naked people stop being, like, interesting as soon as you got to draw them really quickly. I got to say that, like, there's nothing erotic about a nude person when you have to get their form down in 30 seconds.
Well,
it's just like, okay.
When you do figure drawing, there's nothing erotic about it anyway. You're not supposed to. It's not like, when I was in high school,
listen,
and we went to go
listen,
draw people, we
listen,
weren't going to be like, oh, boy, naked people. We actually were doing
listen
it for
to
real.
Me.
No, I'm
listen
not going
to
listen
me.
To you. You listen to me.
What I'm supposed to do and what I do are often two very different things.
You said doo-doo.
I actually, that reminds me, I played through because we didn't do a podcast last thing, so I played through Beavis and Butthead version Stupidity, and it had been maybe 8 years or something since I played it. I didn't remember a lot of it.
Okay.
So, you know, I remembered some of the puzzles, but there was some stuff I didn't remember, and I had such a great time. I was laughing, like, the whole time.
Good. See, well, so, you did play something else.
Yeah, I did. I forgot. I'm sorry.
No, you don't apologize to me. Apologize to Beavis and Butthead.
I'm sorry, Beavis and Butthead. But yeah, if you, okay, like, honestly, if you're an adventure game fan and you're interested in, like, Windows 95, Windows 98 PC gaming,
those are two very, very niche requirements,
well,
I have to
look,
say.
Well, look at our target audience, sir.
You're right.
But anyway, if you're interested in that and you've never played either Beavis and Butthead in Virtual Stupidity or Beavis and Butthead in Do You, check them out, and you've got, like, it's probably best if you're like me and you've got an old computer that you can actually run them on. But seriously, check them out. They are really both great games.
Well,
and if you can handle that kind of humor.
I
can. But if you listen to this podcast, I mean, you're set.
If you listen to and enjoy this podcast, you're set.
Yeah, that's it. If you hate us the whole time, don't play them. But yeah, honestly, I'd forgotten. There's a couple of weird puzzles, but I've played through both those games in, like, the last 12 months, and both of them are actually, considering, like, they're made by MTV, they're actually really strong games.
Hmm.
So
I've played neither of them, so I probably should check them out. I've been trying to find a copy.
I honestly think you'd enjoy them.
Yeah, I've been trying.
If you haven't played them when you come here, I'll let you play them on my PC.
Okay.
How's that sound? I can bring my, like, Windows 98 laptop. Like, next time we go on the road, we can just, like...
You have a Windows 98 laptop?
Dude.
How many computers do you have?
Not enough. That's the only answer you're getting from me.
No wonder you have that dungeon.
Yeah, I've got a dungeon.
It's a dungeon of old computers that you...
Actually, that you just summed it up perfectly.
You know what you need to do? You need to bring your Windows 95 desktop and CRT monitor along on a road trip and lug it around.
Oh, dude, how big do you think my car is? It's a Corolla. It's a hatchback.
Hey, it's pretty spacious. I've been in it. You know what we can do? We can pimp it. We can pimp it out like... we can get Mr. X to the
this exhibit. Oh,
yeah.
Are you... Man...
And we can, instead of putting...
I don't know what I'm more a fan of, Exhibit in general, or the fact that he would pimp my car. I love Exhibit. Are you kidding me?
I think instead of putting, like, a PlayStation 2 inside your car, that shows you how long it's been since I've seen Pimp My Ride. Well,
it's been a long...
He can put in your Windows 95 desktop PC in your car, so you can play it.
But I'd also want, like, a specific DOSBox setup machine, because some DOS games are just a pain to get to run on 95.
Well,
that's
you know
cool.
What?
We could do that.
Beggars
I'm
can't
cool.
be choosers, so you take what Exhibit gives you, and you don't ask questions. Or else
Exhibit can... I know Exhibit better than you'll ever know Exhibit, so back
really?
Off.
Really? Have you met him in person?
No, have you?
Yes.
How many of his... You see, you didn't know any Exhibit until I linked you to one of his songs and was like, dude, this is an amazing song.
I met Exhibit in 1994 when we were at a conference together, and he was very gracious and kind. And I said, gee, Mr. Exhibit, you're really kind, because it was 1994. And he was like...
And you were young.
Yeah, and he was like, hey, man, I'm Exhibit. Don't worry. It'll
That's
all be good.
How he talked.
Oh.
He goes, this your boy Exhibit.
Well, he, that's
Yo,
how he talked.
Your boy Exhibit.
That's how he
X
talked.
To the Z.
That's how he talked back then.
I see. He wasn't quite as street.
He hadn't found his voice yet in 1994.
Did you holla at him?
No, but we ate challah bread together. It was great.
Word
to your mother.
Well, it was 94.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway,
how the hell did we get here?
I don't know. How the hell do we get anywhere? We were talking about Beavis and Butthead.
You're teasing me about having a Windows 98 laptop. What's wrong with that? That's an excellent thing to have. I got it last year for like a few
dollars
the
guy, anyway. Says the guy who was laughing about the fact that the Steam requirements for Golden Wake are Windows ME or higher.
Yeah, I laughed at that because they took away Windows 98 support for AGS, but I'm like, dude, Windows ME is basically Windows 98.
Did you ever see that that Photoshop that someone did where they put together Windows CE, Windows ME, and Windows NT, and they were like, it's Windows Cement?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, that was
cool. And I laughed as well.
Yeah,
it was
I know.
It was funny, I guess. Or maybe I'm just easy to amuse. Probably both.
Well, there was that stop motion of the hula hooping figure model, so you are pretty easy to amuse.
That's that was genius. You don't you dare diminish the amazingness of that.
I love how tongue-tied you get when you get hurt.
You take that back.
I can't. It's impossible. It's already left my lips gazelle-like.
Well,
and it's freely.
I'm disappointed
hopping.
In you.
It's
as
freely
a friend
hopping in the
and as a coworker.
All right. I'll admit that stop motion was pretty genius.
Good. That's good. And I'm just killing a baron of hell. So, you know, I'm taking my frustration out. I'm pretending this is you.
Oh, okay.
And I'm doing it with the chain gun, so I need to use a lot of bullets to do it, so you get more pain.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Anyway, let's do a podcast.
What a sadistic motherfucker you are.
Yeah, I know. Dude, anyway. It's Baron of Hell. I don't like Barons of Hell. I have bad childhood memories of, like, the music. I would say you know the music, but you don't.
No. I didn't play Doom with... I played Doom on PC speaker. It didn't have music.
That's different. Anyway, let's move on.
No, let's not move on. I haven't told you what I've been playing.
Yeah, what have you been playing, Francisco?
I've been playing Planescape Torment.
Yes. You know what I liked the other day? Is when you called me Cutter and I replied with Burke. Yeah. That pleased me immensely. I was like, finally.
Well, the whole reason... what led into that conversation was I was telling you that I needed some extra jink-jink. And then
yes, and I've written fan fiction about this hat thing, so I'm like, this is pretty exciting moment. That's what you do.
You've written fan fiction about me calling you Cutter and you calling me Burke?
Yep. Friends do.
How come I've never read any of this fan fiction?
Dude, it's not, it's like...
Hang on a minute. It's not that. It's not the sort of fan fiction that only exists in your head, is it? And is only accessible at special certain times of the night. If you know what I mean.
I know what you mean better than you know what you mean.
A little bit of a jink jink night. You know what I'm saying?
It's nothing to do with money.
No, I know. I was using jink jink in another sense.
You're using it incorrectly. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I'm just teasing you.
Moving on aside from your disgusting perversions.
How are you enjoying Planescape Torment?
I am very much enjoying Planescape Torment, actually. I have to take breaks every now and then because I find myself losing my concentration abilities, which I blame on old
funny,
age.
It's funny because I told you, like, before you started, I'm like, dude, it's a wordy game. Like, it's a really wordy game. And you were like, oh, dude, I can handle wordy games. And I'm like, no, dude, this is eight novels worth of words.
Yeah, it's pretty wordy.
And you're finally starting to realize that.
I am, but I've enjoyed it. And I come back to it and I play in little sessions, which reminds me, I haven't played it in a few days, but I've been so behind on work that I really can't afford to play any Planescape Torment.
Fair enough.
Maybe I'll find a little window.
The fact that you enjoyed Fallout New Vegas sort of cements the fact that you're going to enjoy Torment, because it's designed, you know, Chris Avellone and, you know, all the gang.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's
I'm
made
so
me what
white. It's ridiculous.
Now is that you're realizing this?
I know, I'm not that deluded.
Good, I'm glad. So we have a podcast and we're going to talk about things, but today we're going to talk about many things. Well, two things. We couldn't think of a topic on our own, so we decided to plumb the depths of our Twitter feed and find old topics that we may never have gotten around to that maybe don't necessarily won't necessarily take up the length of a full podcast. So we'll just talk until we can't talk about them anymore, and then we'll
basically, instead of just one topic like normal, we're going to do many as one.
Yeah, there you go. Squeak, squeak.
Poof. Now I know how you feel when I finally get film references.
Good.
This pleases me.
Well, let's try and keep on topic and be respectable, or we might have a fall from grace.
Okay, we'll run with it.
Yes, by holding down shift and then clicking. you've opened up a can of worms. I hope you know this.
I do. I like this can of worms. I'm happy with it.
Okay, fair enough. Go fishing with it then.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So one of the first topics that we'll talk about comes to us from, I believe, the lovely Brian Demodulated.
One of our favorite guys.
Yes.
On the whole internet.
Yes, and I hope that whoever was impersonating him and being a lame-o spontaneously combusts. Just as an aside. So, you have our support, Brian Demodulated. If you need us to get the herd on, we'll come. We're not just a podcast, we're also a beat-up service.
Who are we going to lean on?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, man, we're the Bogan Bodyguards. We were Ryan's Bogan Bodyguards. We can put the herd on.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right, anyway, Brian asks, how do supporting characters define the protagonist? What's an effective friend / foil / enemy in a game? And that's an interesting question, because you can have several...
Because Brian asked it, and he's an interesting guy.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that I think the question depends on what genre of game you're doing. If we're going to focus...
It does. It really does.
Yeah, because if we're going to focus exclusively on adventure games, which I don't think we should, because...
I don't think we should either.
It's interesting to explore the viable options of this question. In adventure games, your characters are generally a lot more well-defined than they would be in, say, an action game. Like, let's take Doom, for example.
What do you mean supporting characters? It's Doom.
Well, yes.
There's no characters.
Well, no, but there's enemies. There's marine guys, sure. There's demons, there's the barons of hell and stuff, and you have to kill them all. And then you have your protagonist, who is just a nameless, silent marine guy. All you see
he's
about
actually,
him is his
he's
face.
He's actually got a name.
Oh, really? What is his name?
I think it's Buddy.
Buddy, okay.
Yeah, but it was originally something like dies at end of first mission. It was like something short for that.
Oh,
dies at end of first episode or something. Like, I forget. Anatoly will probably hit me, but I don't care.
So it was Defoe? Or something like that?
Yeah, it was something like that.
Back
it was like...
For,
it,
whatever.
It anyway. Was something... You have to, I'd have to check Tom Hall's Doom Bible to... Okay. Remember it, but anyway.
Well, what name do they give him in the novelization?
Oh, some awful, just stupid name. I forget. It's literally not worth remembering.
Okay, fair enough. But anyway, so in a game like Doom, your enemies, I guess, define your protagonist. But the protagonist of Doom is not really very well defined, is he?
No, that's the whole idea. You know, it's an ego shooter. It's like the whole thing about it is, it's like Half-Life, you become the guy, sort of, you know?
Okay, well then let's compare that to, say, well, Half-Life. Half-Life 2, for example, has...
Both Half-Lives, you play as Gordon Freeman, whose whole shtick is being silent. Like, they did that on purpose. He hardly... I don't even know if he grunts when he, like, falls down much.
I don't really think he does. But Half-Life 2 had a lot more...
that was the whole idea.
Yeah.
But you've got Alex.
Yeah, Half-Life 2 had a lot more of a... I think a stronger narrative than Half-Life 1 did. And you had all these characters, these supporting characters who, you know, you felt for. And, And I mean, they
sure.
Yeah, sure. So, but even still, even though Gordon Freeman is silent, he still has a name. He still has a character. He still has, you know what he looks like from the box, anyway. And,
well, I know what Doom Guy looks like from the box.
Well, that's true, but he's wearing a helmet on the box.
Ooh.
I don't know. So, you have these characters in Half-Life 2 who are defining the protagonist by just kind of... They're kind of your window into the game world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most supporting characters are your window into the game world, be it whatever type of game it is. But then, like, in RPGs and stuff, and RPGs are pretty much the cousins of adventure games where you have, you know...
They really... Especially since you're playing Planescape Torment, you really feel that.
Well, the thing about adventure games is, versus RPGs in characterizations and stuff is, I think adventure games tend to be a lot more compact as far as as characters being used to be windows into the world. Because... Generally speaking, in an adventure game, if you walk around and you meet characters, most characters serve a purpose and an immediate function. Whereas in RPGs, you can have more spread out characters, I guess you could say. Like, if you're walking around Sigil in Planescape Torment, for an example here, the world is populated not just by characters with names, but also, you know, just like townsperson or, you know, lower ward townsperson or hive thug or whatever. And you can talk to every single one of those people. But generally speaking, if you're talking to a generically named character, you're going to get a generic conversation option, which is mostly just like, what can you tell me about this place? Okay, goodbye. And you'll get the same answer every time. So you tend to get the characters sort of exist more for exposition than anything else. So, yeah, I think it's a lot more concise in adventure games. And even still, like, some characters you meet in RPGs, their only purpose is just to give you a side quest or just to kind of point you in the right direction or something like that.
I think also something that really bears pointing out, I know you haven't played a lot of, like, RPGs compared to adventure games. You're more of an adventure gamer, but something that really bears pointing out is the fact that RPGs are a reactive world, like, to how you play, you know? Like, you can play good or evil, you can rob people. You know, if you rob someone in an adventure game, you've got an item, you need to do it. That's how you play the game, dude.
Sure.
But if you rob someone in an RPG, for example, like in Baldur's Gate, you'll get the guards after you, and then, you know, you get in trouble with the whole town. And, you know, I've played RPGs where I've had to kill a whole town, you know, because they all come after me. So, depending on your alignment, like, you can do certain quests that you couldn't do as a different person. Like, if you're an evil person, you can do a quest that you couldn't do as a good person. If you're a good person, you can do stuff evil people can't do. So they have to have this bigger world, in a sense, in order to make it worth having alignment, you know? So that really kind of... And also, like, depending on how you play, those people can be people you have to fight, and there's way less puzzles in an RPG. Well, it depends on the RPG, but they've got to have stuff for you to do. There's no puzzles. Well, there's lots of puzzles, but not to the extent of adventure games. They don't have that reliance on puzzles. It's a reliance on exploration and combat. So, yeah, they have to have that many people. Whereas in adventure games, if you've got that many people and they don't do anything, you're going to be lost all the time because you're like, oh, these guys must be for a puzzle. I wonder what they're for. And they're basically red herrings. I mean, obviously, you've got, like, Monkey Island, where you've got a bar full of people and one guy basically exists just to sell you loom and that sort of stuff. But, well, you know. But, yeah, because it's a totally different genre, you know, the different mechanics often define the roles of the people, like the decoration people, you know. And in an RPG, often you've got a party, and depending on who you are and how you play, people will join your party or leave your party, so they have to have more people that can come along with you.
Sure.
And you actually can talk to them and choose, you know, if you find out more about their story, or if you're not interested, you can help them, like, uncover some part of their past. So in a role-playing game, a lot of the flavor comes from a supporting character like that. In an adventure game, a lot of the times, like, you know, they're just along for the ride, like in Sam and Max, you know. They're the duo. They're one character together, really. I mean, they're very similar in how they play and how they sound. It's funny man and straight man, but the straight man's as crooked as hell and the funny man's even crookeder, so.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. It's not really the same mechanic, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
Not in my opinion, anyway. But imagine Sam and Max without Max. It'd suck.
It would be Sam.
You know? Yeah, it would be terrible. Imagine Beavis and Butthead with just Beavis walking around just making stupid jokes to himself and no one, like, riffing on him. Like, that's often... You've got to have that a lot of the time. Like, you know, like with Rosa and Joey Blackwell.
Sure.
Like with, you know... One of my favourite supporting characters ever, and they don't even come along for the whole ride, is... Well, for much of the ride at all, is Mo from Full Throttle, obviously, because I love the fact that Tim Schafer wrote this, like, really tough, you know, 200-pound gorilla of a man that's, like, just kicks everyone's ass and everything like that. And then, as a supporting character, he made an even tougher woman. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really cool to me.
Yeah.
So, I think that sort of helps show the sort of the contrast that you can... I'm kind of waffling a bit here, which I don't mean to, but that helps show, like,
delicious
you don't
waffles.
Need... they are. You don't need to show that a person's strong by surrounding them with weak characters. You can surround them with strong characters and still have them be a strong character by being strong amongst strong characters, you know?
Yeah, I think that plays to the topic quite well, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to have... you have to think about who... who your character is going to be surrounded with if you're going to create an effective story and world in an adventure game, especially. Like,
yeah, if you've got like a stupid character in an otherwise really serious game, it can really grate.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you, yeah, I mean, like, if you have, like, I guess the Leisure Suit Larry approach, where the whole purpose of the game is to kind of make fun of the protagonist, and you have Larry who's like this hopeless loser around all these, you know, beautiful women who don't really have much of a personality. They're just kind of there. And stuff. And other people around are just, like, dumb, too. I don't know. It's kind of despicable, actually, now that I think about it. Larry's worlds. but, yeah, it's, like, it doesn't really do much. I guess for the comedy value, it kind of just... It's just like, oh, haha, we're all laughing at him. What a loser. But I still like the idea that Andale proposed of rebooting Leisure Suit Larry, where he's just a sad old man.
I forgot about that.
I think that's genius.
Yeah, that is really, really funny. but, yeah, I think the supporting character really helps define, like who a character is, you know,
like,
and
when
even gives them a chance to show off who they are.
Yeah.
Like without the supporting characters, you'd never know Simon the Sorcerer is a jerk. You'd never know, you know.
Yeah. Well,
you got to give people a chance to interact with other people.
Here's in a order specific to... question for you.
Okay.
You made a little game once called Airwave. I fought the law, and the law won. Which was a very lovely little game. And you've talked You're welcome. You've talked about... Actually, I'm just being polite. I hated it.
Good.
And I got you with the searching for love joke. I'm still proud of that to this day. Anyway...
yeah, that was actually really good.
All
you sort of got me.
I did. All in jokes aside. You've talked about in the past how you really wanted to emphasize the fact that the supporting characters in that game all knew the main character, and so you'd have them... say little random things when she walked in sometimes to rooms and
yeah,
they saw
it wasn't stuff. It wasn't actually me that said that. It was actually Sebastian. He was testing the game, and it was a pretty early build. And he's like, you know what really feels weird is that she's walking around her hometown and she walks past people that she knows and they don't say anything to her.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, you know what? That's right. If I'm down the street and I walk past somebody I know, they say something to me. They're like, hey, Ben, how you going? How did you go at the thing last week? You know?
Yeah,
That's how people are. And, like, that really gives you a chance to not only make the world feel real of, like, you know, this is the world that this person lives in. This is where they come from, you know? And I kind of went over the top with the indie music in-jokes in that, but that was for my friends, and they all liked it, so, you know, if no one else liked it, who cares? But I think also it's like it gives you a chance to give a bit of backstory about what the person's life's about, instead of going, like, having this huge, big topic where, you know, you have to click through dialogue options constantly, and that can be really... that can suck. Like, if you get this huge tree of dialogue options and you're just mindlessly clicking through them, you've got this huge wall of text that you're, like, getting through one by one, like you're folding your washing and putting it away. Whereas just having this, like, this short three-line thing just naturally evolve out of the fact that you're exploring an environment that just reveals some of the backstory that you would have otherwise made the player pick for themselves, I think that's really nice, you know?
Right. You kind of did that in Piss as well. I mean, just the fact that, yeah, your main character knew everybody, too. Most of the people.
And even, like, there was a couple of people there, there was a couple of people there that she didn't know that she knew. Like, they knew her, but she didn't, because that's the whole playing on the amnesiac thing, because of the Planescape Torment references. And, like,
correct.
And that gives you a chance as well to spin some backstory, you know, without having to go, like... as you said last podcast, like, here's the lore, you know. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, lore!
That's how you said it. That's right. But, yeah, that's a chance
to
explore some of that.
That's how I expect you to say it in the future.
I'll remember that. Thank you. I'll practice. I'll train.
Okay, good.
Because I care what you think.
Good.
And, that's a chance. That's a chance to go through some of that stuff without going, you know, without having the player walk into a scene and give a history lesson.
Sure. So how did you decide what would be an effective character or what about the characters you wanted to sort of show that would play off of your main character to define your protagonist?
It's basically like choosing choosing people that she would have had not only a reason to have interacted with in the past, but done something memorable in their past that they'd be like, you know, that they could impart some not either amusing or revealing piece of information onto the player via that information. So you're not just going, you know, oh, you know, you were really strong, you know. It's going, oh, you know, I don't know how to say it. It's really, yeah, I've forgotten how to talk. But instead of just going like, instead of having people that being like, oh, you know, you're a hero, have them explain why. Why the person was a hero, you know? Like, there was one thing that I really liked, and I don't know if anybody else has ever noticed it. Like, I might be the only one. Like, there's a guy that guards a thing and you have to get a pass from him, and there's like, and he says like how his daughter really wants to be like a mercenary, like when she grows up, and the character says, oh, you know, she really looks up to you, man. And he's like, no, she looks up to you. And that's like, that was a fun moment for me to write, because it's like that when someone says to you like, I really admire you, that's a really big moment for me, like, as a person, you know. It's a little, you get a bit taken aback, but you're also, it feels nice, and you're like, oh. But also the fact that a little girl wants to become a mercenary because of someone that doesn't even really remember her much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought that's a pretty big moment for someone to just find out randomly on the street. I'm like, that's a nice thing. And that's the sort of moments that you remember, I think. But, I mean, no one's ever said anything to me about that moment, so I'm like, maybe it's not as good as I think it is. But, yeah, that stayed with me as something that I wrote that I was actually really proud of.
Okay.
So, I think, like, there's, that represents an opportunity to have somebody find out about themselves while you as the player are finding out about themselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. It makes total,
like,
sense.
While Moira's finding out about herself, you're also finding out about her.
Yeah.
You know, like, she doesn't realize she's inspired this little girl. You don't realize that it's a thing. And a throwaway comment like, how's your daughter doing, can reveal the fact that, you know, this is a person that people look up to, even if she doesn't think her life's very good.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So, I'm sorry. I really rambled a long time there to say very little. I'm sorry.
Just like Planescape Torment. Oh...
That's true. I won't deny it. You know. Well, I'm,
this really, yeah, has, you know, turned into the Planescape Torment podcast.
Well,
I'm looking at the nameless one's angry face right now on the CD.
He's
cover.
Pretty angry. He's pretty tormented, I want to say.
Yeah, he is pretty tormented.
Well, okay.
If I can offer up a little bit of something.
Yeah, please. You need to do some talking. I've done far too much.
Well, on the other side of the coin, because you had a character who found out about herself, but she had some history with these people. I had some characters who basically you meet through... I'm talking about Ben Jordan, Simon and Alice.
Who were great characters, I gotta say. I really like those guys.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Some people... It's funny, because I talk to some people, and some people like them both. Some people hate one and like the others. And
I remember somebody saying, like, when you... Somebody saying that they never liked Simon. I'm like, how do you not like Simon? It's the guy that made the game. In the game, how do you not... It's like, you stop playing the game if you don't like Simon.
So that was a different... A sort of a different thing, because these were characters who were introduced halfway through the series, and you didn't really...
It was exactly halfway, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were introduced in Case 4. And so you don't really know much about them... You know, when you first meet them, you kind of, as Ben, I mean, you know a little bit about Ben from playing the first three games, and then you meet these people and you don't really know them until they introduce themselves.
I still really don't know that much about them, except that Simon likes computers and they both like prog rock.
Yeah, well, see, yeah.
Which sounds good to me. Well, I'm down with that.
And Alice likes Led Zeppelin in a very ham-fisted way of building up her character.
Oh, that's cool. That's fun.
Yeah, my writing wasn't so great back then. But anyway,
well,
we all learn. Yeah, but anyway,
I like Ben Jordan, so be quiet.
Okay, good. So anyway, as the series progressed, you know, I kind of had little opportunities to kind of put in little things about them, and just like, you know, like, because Simon was pretty much just like, you know, he was very upfront all the time. And Alice, you kind of got to know her because Ben was kind of like, will they, won't they sort of relationship thing. So you had the opportunity to ask her about stuff. And like, you know, in case five, I kind of put in the thing where, oh, Alice speaks Japanese. Look, there's something interesting about her character. And, you know, Simon is really good with computers. And, you know, later on...
I forgot that Alice speaks Japanese. That's how much I remember of case five. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I feel the same way about it. And then in like case six, you know, there's the whole love triangle thing where like Ben gets jealous and then Simon gets upset at the fact that they have their little like lovers quarrel, and you know, there's drama there in the relationships, and then, you know, that sort of set the stage for what happens in case seven and onwards. But I mean, like, in that case it was like-minded people as the protagonist, and they kind of played off of each other, because I mean, Alice, aside from being the love interest, was, you know, she was a useful character. She had her moments to shine.
Well, they were both useful,
yeah,
really. Like,
yeah.
They both had.
Even though Simon never left the hotel room most of the time.
Yeah, but he was your notebook.
He was
your Wikipedia.
I know. Good thing that the series was set in 2004, because otherwise Ben would have had a smartphone.
Dude, what about that Nokia phone?
Oh, yeah, the icon phone. Yeah.
But, like, I think, like... Well, what was I going to say? I think, like, the thing that I liked about Simon and Alice was, like, in case four, which was the
house.
The fact, like, yes. The typical haunted house thing where you've got, like, all these same people in a house, like, they're all there to investigate. It was nice, like, amongst all these other weirdos who I wasn't sure about, I could actually have someone to, like, relate to. I was
One of the most important scenes to me, I thought, was the option where you have to either spend the night staying up talking to them.
Dude, how are you not going to stay the night talking to them?
Some people didn't.
Really?
I think so. I don't know. That's why I gave him the choice. So,
that's like choosing between eating sweets and not eating sweets. It's not really a choice. It's the illusion of choice. You're going to eat the sweets because they're delicious.
It depends. If I've already spent the day eating sweets, I'm not going to eat any more.
Well, you want to take a good hard look at yourself then, don't you?
I do, mostly because I fit in the mirror. Unlike some people I could mention.
Well, I like sweets, so I don't care about looking good because I'm happy.
Good. Good. Anyway.
What yes. A podcast we're having.
I know.
This is an adventure.
Anyway. I always like it when we get to the point where you're just like, oh, this is the worst podcaster. Oh, no. Because then I know we've had a good one.
Yeah.
And to talk about enemies briefly, I've always thought it's really interesting to have enemies where they're not just complete polar opposites of the main character, but where they sort of share... They have human qualities to them, you know.
Actually, we were talking about this the other day with the game that we're both currently working on, and we were discussing our main antagonist. And I said to you, like, I think the strongest part of the Ben Jordan series was when you found out exactly why, like, the main guy did what he did. He wasn't trying to take over the world. He wasn't, like... I think that's the stupidest justification for doing something.
Yeah, we've mentioned who would want to take over the world.
Why? I know that everybody wants to rule the world, but it's not the 80s anymore, you know? That went on for much longer than I expected it to, I gotta say. Well done.
It fizzled out.
Yeah, that's cool.
But you know, all I want to be is completely in command, so that's why you want to take over the world.
Look what I've done.
I mean,
anyway,
it's,
but yeah,
it's
like,
a mad world. It's a mad world, but you
oh,
want to take it
stop
over.
Stop it, you. Stop it. That's enough.
I'm sorry.
It's enough.
I have to confess something to you, Ben.
I'm here for you now.
I really just wanted to be with you alone and talk about the weather.
Yeah, look, I know.
Moving on. So antagonists, I think, are especially interesting is if they maybe share some sort of ideal or trait as
yeah,
the main character.
Absolutely. So give him a reason for doing something more than like, oh, I wanted to do it, or he's crazy. Crazy is the stupidest thing. You know, if somebody like says, oh, he wants to do it because he's insane, that's not justification.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, but
that's
also
like, that's weak.
But also, I want to point out that if you do have a character, a villain, who shares an ideal with your main character or whatever, please, please, please avoid having them say, "We're not so different, you and I."
Well,
because that is just, that's cheesy and it's stupid and cliche, and don't do it. It's bad writing.
I agree. Well, it's been done so many times that when you see it, you might as well say, "I'm your father." It's been done so many times that it's been flagged as like,
yeah,
this is a thing that's been done. Everybody does it when they've got nothing else to do.
I saw a YouTube compilation of movies that all featured that line, and there was so many of them, and it was so pathetic that it made me sad.
Okay. Well, yeah, I agree. That's the thing about writing. You want to set yourself apart. You want to give your characters rather than running the same roads that every other character in those shoes have walked before them. You want to give them something that makes them stand out, makes them unique, makes them believable. Because a unique character is more believable just for the fact that they're doing something that they're not just playing by the numbers. They're doing something that actually makes them an individual, makes them unique.
Mm-hmm. Yes, good.
So, I agree.
Good. Now, let's move on to the next...
So we both agree on that?
Yes, we both agree on that.
Well, we're not so different, you and I.
Anyway.
Anyway, let's move on.
The next topic comes to us from Sonata Fanatica, who asks... Okay. What about
Man,
the topic?
I said that I think they like Sonata Arctica, the band, which is hilarious because that's a funny band. I hope that, and if they're listening, I'm not picking on Sonata Arctica because I've listened to their music before.
Good.
But anyway.
So Sonata Fanatica asks, what about the topic of use of linguistic features / accents / code switching in video games? How significant is language in games? Which I find a very interesting topic, having been an interpreter.
Yep.
I think that language is an interesting way to convey a different culture or a different sort of thing in an adventure game, especially. Like, to use the example of The Longest Journey, where there's that bit where you first show up before you get the whole history of the murals that we talked about. And
yes.
Minstrom Tobias is talking in this weird language, and you just have to listen to him. Like, you can talk to him and be like, "What are you saying? I don't understand. What's going on?" And he just repeats himself. But then when you listen to him, he starts, like, his weird language starts getting interspersed with words that you understand. And the more you listen to him, the more you kind of, you understand him. And then he's like, "Oh, we're speaking all tongue. Everyone understands this." Which was kind of a cool little thing, I thought. And there's also the example in The Dig, where there's the alien who...
Which, you don't understand.
Yeah, and then you get Maggie to sort of interpret for you, which I admit I completely stole that mechanic in Case 5 with Alice speaking in Japanese.
Yeah.
But I thought it was cool to do that. And so, it's an interesting thing to do.
I like, have you ever played BAT? I think it's Bureau of Astral Travelers.
No, I haven't.
The Koshan Conspiracy was the second game. There's like, you walk around this big cyberpunk city and you talk to people and they've got like these weird alien symbols, which goes a long way to make it feel like a cyberpunk city, but then there's like this thing I have to figure out how to talk to these people. So it's like, I think it helps both create a mysterious world, and it also gives like, it's a cool puzzle. Like, it doesn't feel like a locked door. Like, I'm not just finding a key, I'm actually discovering something about a culture, and I really like that it's a locked door in a sense, like every other puzzle in an adventure game, but while being an obstacle, it also feels very realistic.
Well, I've had a couple of ideas for games which have just been ideas, and I have no idea how I would implement them in an actual game, but I used to have the idea of sort of having like a sort of translating / interpreting puzzle where like someone spoke and you had to translate for someone. But the problem with that becomes, how do you do that in a way that it becomes universal for all the players? Because if you can't do it from actual languages, because then that doesn't make much sense. I guess
you have to invent a language.
You could either invent a language or you could have the person speak in symbols, which...
Yep.
Yeah, so, but I don't know how I would properly implement that, but that's always been an idea I've wanted to do.
An interesting idea.
Another thing I've wanted to do is kind of like to make a game where, like, you know, maybe someone in the course of the story is like exiled to a different land or something where they don't speak the language. So, yeah, you know, kind of like, you know, just like anything, like anyone who moves, you know, like immigrants to the United States that don't speak English when they get here. You know,
sure, and, or if like one of us actually went to Japan, like in Ben Jordan.
Well, I mean, yeah, but plenty of people. I'm talking about, yeah, just like, I guess, not to be political or anything, but a country like the United States that's a lot more like, well, speak English or get out.
that's that was very good. Thank you. I like that a lot.
Thank you. But yeah, like someplace like, you know, you could do like a sort, like, Dave was talking last time about how the author who did the thing about Kenya and how he set it on an alien planet, like, yep. You could do a story about, you know, the, some sort of big migration in history, and you could have it like, you know, set, you know, about the, maybe like all the immigrants who came in the early 19th century to New York, and they came through Ellis Island and didn't speak the language, you know, like you'd have a game where they, you go to this place and you don't understand what's going on, and just like the people speak in gibberish maybe or something else, and there could be a puzzle where you have to kind of figure out what's going on or something like that. Just, I don't know. Or like even in,
yeah,
like a perfect example of this too, even though there's not a language, but you kind of have to figure out what things mean, is Out of This World or Another World, where you kind of, you know,
Max Scuba.
Yeah, exactly. Max Scuba. Yeah. What does that even mean? It means, come on, let's go.
Does it?
I don't know.
Some people seem to think that it's his name.
Oh.
But who knows?
Okay.
I don't know. Well, I'm not an expert. Maybe, we should ask Eric Shay.
Maybe if we follow Max Scuba.
He listens to our podcast. Yeah. Maybe if we ever go to another world.
Wow.
But yeah, that's... How do you... Should, yeah, that's... but I think Another World has got such strong visual storytelling that having that one word in there actually becomes really memorable, because that's the only word, apart from like... That's the only spoken word. There's a few written words in the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And from there on in, obviously, you're in an alien place.
Sure.
Which really...
It really does feel really, like an alien place.
Yeah, are you kidding me? That feels fantastic to me. One thing I really like about Another World, and I actually talked about this the other day on Das Ist Good, one thing I really thought was fantastic about it was, like, you're not just going through, like, you're not Mario going through pipes and, like, just jumping and flowers and shit, you know? This is actually, like, you go into, like, different parts of their civilization. Like, at one part, you're in a big gladiator-style arena. At another part, you're, like, crashing through a bathhouse,
mm-hmm.
you know? You go through a military installation, you go through caves, you're actually finding out about the world while you're also trying to survive. And I love how alien that feels, because you, it doesn't feel like just some set of levels you're going through. You're like, oh, I'm in the bathhouse, you know, I'm going through this alien world. It really, for me, developed a really strong world that you can actually really feel a part of. As much as you're like trying to survive, because, you know, you die, you also feel like you're exploring a place. And as you know, exploration for me is a really strong thing. And I love that. That's what really makes... There's two things that make Another World really so special for me. The first is that... And the second is, like, that the gameplay is ever-shifting and completely dynamic. Like, you know, you have to learn different puzzles. It's puzzle-style gameplay. So you're not just kicking the same guy in the same way every time you see him. This time you've got to put shields up. This time you've got to shoot first. This time you've got to, you know, find his reflection in the thing. They're the two things that really made it so special. So having that alien feeling, you know, it's as much a visual language as it is, like, a linguistics thing. So I've probably gone off a bit off topic a bit. But it's also like playing Planescape Torment, and you're surrounded by all that slang.
Yeah,
it does help cement the feeling. It's the,
well, and also the Davises who you have to.
Yeah, that's right. They've got symbols over their head, and they're like the Gith talk in their own language, and like, yeah, it's the Clockwork Orange, where it's got the slang that kind of helps establish the world and the setting.
Correct. Yes. Drew. Yeah, actually, I was a little hesitant to say, but I'll talk about it now, because whatever.
Do it.
It's down the road.
Who cares?
Nobody steal my idea, okay? This is just my thing. I have an idea that it's been in my head for years, and don't take it, anybody. That's my preface.
Oh, okay. Why aren't we protective?
Well, it's a very personal thing that I want to do, and you know. Anyway.
Okay.
So I just finished with Golden Wake, which is now available for pre-order, by the way. Go out and buy my game. Buy my game. Anyway. And a lot of people have been asking, you know, or people have been telling me, oh, you should do this next, this historical thing. And I kind of want to move away from the historical fiction for a little while because, you know.
Fair enough.
I've been doing it with A Golden Wake, and to an extent I sort of did it with Ben Jordan. So I want to explore fantasy or fictional areas, which is what we're doing with our game and the game I have planned for after that. But I've always wanted to do a game, and I don't know. I've always said when the time was right. Maybe the time was right in the future. But I've always wanted to get to do a game that was sort of a representation of the whole Cuban Revolution and, like, the having to leave Cuba and the whole exile thing that my grandparents and parents went through. I actually saw a really good documentary about it when I went down to Miami last week. It wasn't anything that I didn't already know, because, you know, I've grown up hearing everything and seeing everything and all that stuff. But there's some really, like, potential for just interesting stories to come out of that setting. But also there's the whole idea of, you know, that what I mentioned before of coming to this foreign land in a time, especially where, you know, there wasn't this necessarily, like, you know, because this all happened in the 60s. And mm-hmm. you had the whole Peter Pan thing, which was the airlift that they did for all the children who got separated from their parents, and, like, their parents sent their kids off to this new country in hopes that they would be able to, like, you know, reunite with them later on. And some of these kids stayed in South Florida, but a whole bunch of them got sent to, like, you know, Montana or just somewhere in the Midwest. So if you can imagine, you know, being like a little 6-7-year-old kid being separated from your parents, in some cases they never got to see their parents, or their, you know, they got sent with their brothers and sisters, but then they got separated and put in, like, foster homes and stuff. So, like, families just completely got torn apart in this new land where they didn't speak the language and just were, like, you know. Like, my mom told me stories about how when she came to school, like, her first day of school here, she cried the whole time in the corner. They put her in a corner and she cried because she didn't understand what was going on. So, like, just to be able to depict something like that in an adventure game, I think would be kind of interesting, just to have that.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I mean, I have no idea how you could turn that into a game. Like,
I don't either.
Losing some of the impact of the story, but that sounds like a really great idea for a setting.
Yeah, just to have this sort of world where you don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I hope you make that, because that sounds great.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. We'll see what comes down the pipeline.
No, you listen to me, you do it.
I don't want to do historical fiction right now, okay?
Yeah, okay.
By the way, what's that noise? It sounds like you've got a baseball card in a bicycle wheel spoke.
Yeah, I had the chain gun. I was being surrounded by demons.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I got a rumble on.
Ah, okay, that's what it is.
I got a DualShock 3 because I'm a modern gamer.
I do too, but I usually turn... I don't turn vibration off.
You just
I put it on my lap.
No.
I don't do that.
No. No, man, we've just gone from a really nice, interesting idea to that.
That's me, in a nutshell.
You said nut.
No, but going back to it, yeah. I don't know. Actually, what Dave said was really interesting to me. If I were to do that story, I don't know if I would just be, you know, completely transparent about it and make it about the Cuban Revolution, or if I would just use an allegory and set it in a different sort of thing and just be...
Yeah, I think, well...
I don't know what would work better.
The only thing is I have trouble, like, seeing how you turn that into a game. I mean, unless it's, like, a kid trying to reunite with their mother or something like that, with their family. Which, yeah, but, I mean, I think it's a very powerful setting.
Yeah,
like, to place someone into.
I guess what you could do with that is, well, let's not brainstorm this now.
Let's not design a game live on the podcast.
No, let's not do that. We'll talk about it after we finish the podcast.
Okay.
Because I've just gotten some interesting ideas. But anyway, the idea of just having a world where your character doesn't understand the language and kind of has to figure it out, that would be interesting. Accents,
I think,
as far as accents go. I can't really think of any game that has used the idea of accents in a meaningful way, aside from just like, oh, this person is from somewhere else, or, oh, this is a comedy accent. I'm thinking of Wing Commander, for example.
Wing Commander is when we voice act it.
Well, but it's written that way.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know how you could do that without, like... I mean, I can think of puzzles that could work like that, but it'd seem cheap, you know? And it'd seem a bit xenophobic.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Well, that reminds me of a story, actually. Sit down,
when
kids.
When I was a boy.
No, I took a road trip. The first time I went to New Orleans, I went with my mother. We took a road trip, and we drove through Florida and Alabama and Mississippi and everything. And at one point, we were in Alabama. We were in Mobile, Alabama.
Okay, Cletus. And you're Bubba. I'm Cletus. Sorry.
Yes, correct. We were in Mobile, Alabama, and my mom likes collecting magnets. She does. If you ever decide to get your goddamn passport and find yourself in the United States and we're at my house, you can see my refrigerator and you'll see the magnet.
Dude, you already showed me on webcam. Are you kidding me?
Oh, that's right. Okay. Well, anyway.
You gave me a full tour.
Did I? Oh, yeah, when I had my laptop.
God bless the internet.
Yeah, sure. So anyway, my mom wanted a magnet and she wanted one from Alabama. So we were trying to figure out a place where we could go to get a magnet. So she stopped a lady in the middle of the street and she said, "Excuse me, could you please tell me where I might find a store where I could get a magnet?" And the lady said, "Oh yeah, sure, there's this place called Scatters over there that you can get it." So we were like, "Okay, let's go look for Scatters." So we figured, okay, well, Scatters sounds like, you know, it's like you have all sorts of scattered assorted goods. I guess that makes sense for a business establishment's name. So we were driving around in circles for like half an hour before we just decided to like stop and ask again, "Where is the Scatters place?" And so my mom stopped and was like, "We're looking for a place called Scatters." And they're like, "Scatters? You mean Scotties?" So her accent was very thick.
Yeah. I have a
led to misunderstanding.
I have a similar story, but I'll try not to drag it out too long. There was an old wool buyer by the name of Solomon Schildkraut, and he was a Jew in Germany during World War II.
I know this story, but please tell it.
Yeah, and anyway, so he had a very strong accent, you know, because he was an immigrant and a lovely old guy. Like, I had a lot of time for old soul and, you know, rest in peace, poor old guy. But he came up and I had a hard time understanding him most days, but he came up to me one day. I was probably 17 years old because I'd just gotten my first job and I'd just gotten home from work. And Solly was there, and I was like, "Hi, Sol, how you going?" He said, "Good, good. Where is Eric?" And I said, "I don't know where he is. He could be..." Eric's my father, by the way. And I said, "I don't know where he is. He could be anywhere on the farm. You know, it's a big farm. He could be anywhere." And he said, "Oh, he has two eyes." And I went, I think so. Like, I think he's got two eyes. Like, has there been an accident?" What's up? And he said, "Oh, what channel is on the two eyes?" And I went, "Oh, you mean the two-way radio?" So, like, I can see, like, you could work that into a puzzle.
Yeah.
Like, but it would seem xenophobic to me.
Like, not necessarily. You know, I mean, it depends.
It
depends on how you portray it.
Yeah. But, yeah, so that was one instance where an accent has thrown me off.
Yeah.
Like,
actually,
finding the absolute substance of a conversation.
Amusingly and completely unrelated, but I like tenuous links. I was also 17 when that scatter scotty story happened. So maybe
this is like a rite of passage.
Maybe you like just yeah, when you're 17, someone. When you're 17, you just don't understand what people say.
I don't. Nobody understood. Yeah. Nobody understood me when I was 17.
Oh,
so, you know.
Boo!
Where's my eyeliner?
Yeah. Goth dream boy. I think we should probably wrap things up.
Yeah, this has been a very odd podcast, but hopefully we've answered some of your questions.
Yes. And
those
if
of
you, have,
you that asked it, both Sonata
Fanatica and Brian
Fanatica and Brian.
Yes, and
Brian,
if you
Brian knows us, he will be Brian's, he'll be like
yeah. Brian's good for questions. So, Brian, if you have any more questions, please ask them. And anyone else, if you have questions too, we like getting questions, even though we don't necessarily always answer them in a timely fashion. We'll get to them eventually.
Or properly.
But we'll get to them eventually, and yeah, like we did today. And it helps because we've had a little bit of difficulty thinking of decent topics lately, but I'm sure we'll have it. Okay, well, just I have because I'm lazy.
Yeah, it was your turn to think of the podcast topic this week, and
I didn't realize we did it in turns.
Well, I did like the last four, so I'm like,
okay. All right, fair enough.
I'm sick of talking about what I want to talk about. No, I love it.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, I am Ben, at Ben_304 on Twitter, if you'd like to follow me there.
Oh, wow, you're learning to self-promote. Yes, and I am at Grunislav Games. That's GRUNDISLAV, Grunislav Games, on Twitter.
And by our powers combined,
we are
at BCT
_ podcast. Yeah. There you go. Look for us on iTunes.
How good was that Captain Planet reference?
It was really, really good.
Thank you.
Did you ever even watch Captain Planet?
Are you kidding me? I love Captain Planet. He had a green mullet. How would I not watch it? And I always felt sorry for the guy whose power was heart. I'm like, dude, the other guys can make earthquakes and like tornadoes and floods and stuff. And he's like, I can talk to our monkey.
But his was the most important power of all.
Piss off. That's bullshit.
That was the excuse that they gave him anyway.
Yeah, because there was the 90s and people were like, dude, if you're going to make a superhero power is recycling, then you're not very tough.
What I'd like to know is why did they give the heart power that nobody wanted to the little Mexican boy?
The brown boy?
The little brown boy, yes.
Yeah, that's...
Well, I mean...
Dude, you're not going to give a really cool power like fire to a minority. Are you kidding me? It was made in America.
Are you kidding me? They gave the powers to all the other minorities. They gave the Earth to the African kid who was LeVar Burton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
And the Asian girl had wind and the Russian girl had water. And the American redhead had fire.
Was she Russian?
Linka.
How appropriate that they gave a redhead fire. I never picked up on the funniness of that until just now.
The American Wheeler with the red hair, you got fire.
Wind.
Water!
She even said it like she was windy.
She was the wind blowing.
I'm the wind. Imagine if like her power was like being cursed with gas. And, like, the redhead guy just got sunburned all the time.
No, if her power was being cursed with gas and the redhead guy would stand behind her.
And then team power.
You burned down the rainforest. Captain Planet's angry now.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now that we've completely soiled that bit of 90s children's cartoons, we should probably quit while we're ahead. Find us on iTunes and Twitter, and if you like adventure games and the 1920s, go and pre-order A Golden Wake for only $14.99, and you'll get a free copy of the soundtrack, and it comes out October 9th.
I feel like there's something we're missing. Oh yeah, I remember. Play more DOS games. Bye.